you may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden, exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again, as Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the Hagman and Hagman Report on this Monday edition. We are joined by our guest, Mr. Jerry Robinson. His website, ftmdaily.com, followthemoneydaily.com. You can bookmark that, sign up for his newsletter. It's a weekly newsletter, as well as his podcast. He's the author of a book, The Bankruptcy of Our Nation. And as I said at the beginning of the first hour, we had the pleasure of meeting him in Orlando, Florida in 2015 and did a roundtable panel discussion with Paul McGuire, Jerry, my father, and myself on the economy, as well as geopolitical news tied into biblical prophecy, current events through a biblical perspective. We're talking tonight about the 28 pages, the censored 28 pages of the 9/11 Commission, the implications that it has for the Saudi government, and how deep does the rabbit hole go as far as the Saudis' involvement in 9/11, not only in having the citizens who were Saudi Arabians, I think it was 11 hijackers who were Saudi Arabians, but also how high in the Saudi government does the connection to 9/11 go. We're talking about the presidential connections from George Bush. George Bush was, his first oil company was started with the Bin Laden families. They started the Carlyle Group together. They were very close business partners. And Bush became president, Bush won. And what did he do? He invaded Iraq. And Bush Jr., Bush 2 became president. And what happened after 9/11? He invaded Iraq. Even Dick Cheney, when asked what Osama bin Laden or Iraq had to do with the invasion of 9/11, said, we have no proof that they had anything to do with it. But somehow, we invaded Iraq, and Saudi Arabia remained to be cleared, or, for the most part, unnamed, an unnamed co-conspirator in 9/11. Jerry, I'm going to bring you back on this hour, and I'm going to let you start it off where you want to. And just folks, for general, just for your information, the third hour we will be taking calls with Jerry. Listeners who have questions, who want to talk to Jerry about anything we're talking about tonight, or any other financial, geopolitical questions, we will take those in the third and final hour. But Jerry, let me turn you loose and let you start where you may this hour.
Well, sure. You know, I think I mentioned earlier, I had the great opportunity to talk to, the honor to speak with Senator Bob Graham earlier today on the phone for our podcast, and, it'll be released later this week. Senator Bob Graham is a guy who has, you know, he's been in the government. He was a senator. He was a governor of Florida. He served on the Senate Intelligence Committee, and he also, served on the 9/11, commission, or the inquiry, into 9/11. And helped draft the 28 or the entire report, 838-page report, but also the 28 pages that are currently under lock and key in Washington. And as we had said, people who had read those 28 pages have said that it changes their entire view of history over the last, 13, 14, 15 years. So we could be. Now, what we have heard recently is that, and this comes from Bob Graham from my discussion with him earlier, that we will very likely see the 28 pages released in June of this year by the Obama administration, and there's a very likely chance that they're going to be redacted, right? So, in other words, they're going to release the 28 pages, but they're going to release only parts of the 28 pages, further aggravating, no doubt, those who are wanting to see the evidence. Another really interesting, so that could happen in June, but again, I think people who are observant, who are watching what's happening, need to realize that, again, this is all smoke and mirrors still. Nothing really, no mortal damage has been done yet. It's all mere words. But things could happen. We could allow Saudi Arabia to be sued. Saudi Arabia could begin dumping treasury. I mean, there's something could begin to happen, but right now it's still kind of frozen in time, but it could be thawing. We'll see what's going to happen. The other thing is that many people may not know this, but Iran recently was sued by the victims of the 9/11 families, and the lawsuit stuck. In fact, Iran has to pay somewhere around $13, $14, $15 billion to the corporations who lost money in 9/11 and to the families of the victims. But they're not going to do that. But by the way, the same judge who ruled against Iran and who ruled that they must pay that money to the 9/11 victims' families, ironically, and this is no joke, this is unbelievable, the same exact judge was the same judge who said that Saudi Arabia could not be sued by the 9/11 families or victims' families. So, it's a huge display of this global crony capitalism, I guess, is the best thing that you could say, where we cover for our buddies when they're our buddies, right? And when they're not our buddies anymore, then suddenly the veil comes off. So if suddenly the mobs of Americans have the same look of blood in their eye that they did for Iraq or that they did for Afghanistan, if they suddenly get that same look of blood in their eye for Saudi Arabia, then we could end up in another battle. It's hard to imagine, but that could happen. But more than likely, there's just going to be a cooling off of the relationship, and there's going to be a diversification by Saudi Arabia away from the United States. As we mentioned, they're the number one importer of weapons in the world. Number one importer of weapons in the world is Saudi Arabia, and yet Saudi Arabia and Saudi funding are constantly pointing the finger at Iran. If you walk through a Christian bookstore, you see 15 books about Iran and maybe one book, if any, on Saudi Arabia, despite the fact that Saudi Arabia is the number one financier of global terror, despite the fact that out of its madrasas and schoolhouses, it's teaching its children to murder and kill Christians, Shiites, Jews, and anybody who doesn't happen to look and act like them. And so, despite all of that, the watchmen on the wall in the Christian community seem to be spouting Saudi propaganda as opposed to the truth. And the truth of the matter is that Iran, in Ezekiel 38 and 39, we read that Iran joins a party of nations and they invade Israel. They invade Israel. See, that sells really well. If you say that Iran, the Bible says Iran's going to invade Israel, that's a book that you can sell probably for $20. If you make a DVD, you can probably sell it for $30. But what you do not want to include in that book or that DVD is the fact that the Bible literally says, within those same paragraphs, that God is going to defend his people Israel and that he is going to show himself mighty on their behalf. Well, we don't care about that part so much. We're more concerned with the fear that's generated by Iran maybe attacking Israel. So it's so strange how the people of faith, or at least the people who were once known as the people of faith, are now more often associated with a people living in fear. So I'm not afraid of Iran. I say bring it on, because the Bible says that if Iran does bring it on, that they're going to be wiped out by the God of Israel. So why would I spend any more time worrying about that unless I did not have any faith? But the mortal threat to my economy, the mortal threat to Israel, the one who has attacked Israel in 1948, the one who attacked her in 1967, the one who attacked her or paid for the attack in 1973, all of this stuff, Saudi Arabia, leads right back to Saudi Arabia. But the reason why we don't talk about it, the reason why the church doesn't talk about it, is because nobody talks about it. And now suddenly everybody's starting to talk about it. And again, anytime that happens in the past, that's usually not good news. When we don't hear about our thuggish allies, it's normally good news for those thuggish allies. But when we start hearing about them in the media, and they start bantering them about in front of the bloodthirsty American population, suddenly things can change in a radical heartbeat. So Saudi Arabia is probably very nervous. I would imagine the Bush folks, I would imagine W. Bush is probably quaking in his boots, the fact that the nuts are falling from the trees the way that they are right now. I mean, if it really is true what's in those 28 pages, if it really is true that Saudi Arabia funded and financed and helped even orchestrate, if you listen to some of these guys who've read the 28 pages, if that really is true, how in the world can it be justified for attacking Saudi Arabia's mortal enemy, Iraq, in 2003? How in the world will they be able to explain that? It doesn't make any sense. So therefore, it's understandable why they wouldn't want to release those pages if they really say what they say. But the problem is that the men and the women on the watchtower, right? The women and the men who are supposed to be watchmen on the wall, they have got to not, they cannot be infected by propaganda. They cannot be infected by the same propaganda that infects our mainstream press. And if they are, then they're of no use. They're of no good. So we need men and women who are not listening to the propaganda that's coming out of all corners of the world, and instead who listen to the Bible. I'm not worried about Iran, because God says he's going to take care of that one. He doesn't say anything about Saudi Arabia. I think I need to keep my eyes on them. He doesn't say that he's going to protect me from them, right? He does say that he's going to protect the Jew from Iran. So anyway, I guess what I'm saying is that there doesn't seem to be a lot of logical conclusion. We could even show this parallel one more way. The most recent way was when Donald Trump made the comment, and I'll bring up Donald Trump here, but Donald Trump made the comment recently that abortion, women who have abortions, if it is deemed to be illegal to murder a child in the womb, right, if it's deemed to be illegal, that woman should be held accountable. That's what Donald Trump said. And the Christian community, of all people, the Christian community and more than that, the pro-life organizations came out and said, Trump doesn't understand. That's certainly not something. We would never request for someone who murders their child to ever pay any kind of consequences. What in the world is Trump thinking? They revealed their hand to us. The same thing happened recently whenever Trump's really showing up the church. It's really something. Trump recently also said this. He said that his favorite verse, somebody asked him in a radio interview. They love to get this guy. What's your favorite Bible verse, Trump? And Trump says something along the lines of, well, you know, I like eye for an eye, right? Oh, and here comes the Pharisees, right? The Pharisees love this line. And they say, oh, yeah, see, that's in the Old Testament. That's not in the New Testament. He's obviously not a Christian. See, he's not a Christian because no Christian supports eye for an eye anymore. That's so obvious, you know. What? 62% of the people who support the torture of our enemies, according to the Pew Research report that was released about the Senate CIA report, when they asked people on the street, who are you, and what do you think, they found that 62% of evangelical Christians supported torturing our enemies. Torture. And so what I think is so funny is when the church actually tries to act as if it's following the commands of Jesus, when so clearly it's not. I mean, in America today, you don't hear Jesus' words. You just don't hear them. They're missing. They're gone. You don't hear the challenges of Jesus' words anymore.
They've been taken almost away.
Almost even from the pastors today, that we've had a defanging, so to speak, and that's probably a bad word. But our pastors have been effeminate. I was walking through the store the other day. I saw guys with spikes in their face. I saw guys with tattoos all over their body. I saw effeminate men, very, very effeminate men. And I was walking through, this was a Whole Foods, I was walking through with my two children. I have two boys. And I'm walking through the Whole Foods, and I'm just dressed like a normal guy with my two boys on my hips. And everywhere around me are effeminate men, dudes with spikes in their face, tattoos. Man, we have lost our way. We have lost our way. We have lost our way. Men are no longer considered. The role of manhood has been so destroyed, and it's thanks in much part to the corrupt media today that portrays men as effeminate and plays that up. Tries to tell people that transsexual is common and normal, tries to tell your kids that everything's fine. That's why we say, look, that's why I got my family out of the city. I think the city is, in many ways, a very dangerous place for a Christian. I don't believe that it's a dangerous place physically. I don't want people to think that. I think spiritually it is. You know, you think about the city, and you think about the city, and whenever I go into the city, you know what I can't see in the sky? I can't see the signs of the heavens. When I come out to my place, or I go out into the country, when I spread myself out the way God said, when He says, go, be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth, and stop building cities, right? I have a city. God has His own city. He's going to bring down His own city, New Jerusalem. He doesn't need your cities. He doesn't need your cities and your buildings, right? He's got His own city. He's got His own building, and He's going to bring it down, and He's going to get rid of all these other cities. But anyway, long story short, when I go into the city, I can't see the signs of the heaven. I can't see the moon. I can't see the stars. I can't hear God. I can't see God. In order for Moses to hear God, Moses had to be yanked out of the city to the backside of the desert. He met God at the burning bush right in front of Mount Horeb, which in the Hebrew means desolate or waste. It's a wasteland. God got Moses out of the city, and then He tells him, go get my people and bring them out of the city, right? Go get them out of the city. Bring them out. I'm going to build my own land. I'm going to have my own city. So God has a city, and I believe that Christians today need to be in the world, but they don't need to be of the world, and they certainly don't have to subject themselves to the stresses of living a corporate lifestyle, of eating corporate food, of propping up, you know, the failing education systems of our country. I mean, I just don't think it's necessary. I think that we need to get back to basics. My wife and I live on a property, and we moved out here specifically to get off of the grid. And so we've built a big garden. It's a lot of work. I mean, it's, you know, I understand why people don't do this. It's very, very tough. I mean, it's very tough. And I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, half the stuff I'm doing, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm having to learn. But these are the kinds of things that we were made to do. You know, this is what God made us for. The corporate environment that we have today, the cities that we have today, they're all a deception. They're a deception. And they lead us to believe that mankind is improving. That's the lie that you can always get an atheist or you can get an agnostic on. Anybody who tells you that mankind is improving because we have better medicine or because we have more knowledge, they think that we're actually ascending, right? But the truth of the matter is that we're just as racist, if not, well, no. We are more racist today than we were in the 1960s. Those of you who were alive in the 1960s remember black people being hosed in the middle of the streets of America. Those were the good old days that we're trying to get back to. I had a black person in one of my audiences not too long ago, and it just stuck out of my mind. I am no friend of those who want to take America back for God. I think that's the worst idea in the world. Because when people say they want to go back, they want to take America back, you know, they don't realize how that sounds to people, right? If you are brown, or if you're a woman, or if you are black, or if you're a Native American, or if you're, you know, you just go through the list. If you're any of those things, that's not what you want, right? That would not make your life good, would it? But it'll make white guys' lives better. So they want to take it back. So that's a negative language. I don't like taking it back. I can't imagine where I would go. Where would you go if you could go back? Would you go back to the 60s where we hose blacks in the street? Or maybe we would go back to the, maybe back to the Civil War where we were killing one another, our Christian brothers and sisters, over the rights to slavery, slave rights, states' rights. Will we go back to the very foundation of the country where we grew our economy on rum and tobacco? That was the, those were the two main staples of the American economy, and that's how we became great, rum and tobacco. That tobacco, by the way, was picked by black people. You know, so my point is that where do we go? Where are we trying to go back to? I don't understand. There is no place to, the only place to go is go forward. Paul says, I press forward for the prize of the high calling of Christ. Go forward. Don't go back. Don't try to get your city or your country or your nation state to reflect God's glory. God says he's going to replace it. He said, I already have a city. I've already got a kingdom. I've got it. Come be a part of my kingdom. Come be a part of my city. Come, just come be a part. He tells us to come. But we don't want to come. We want to stay in our own cities. We want to stay in our own Babels. We want to build our own towers. We want to make our name great. We want to get our education. We want to get a corporate job. We want to have a great raise. We want to have a Timex at 65. We want to have a great retirement. And then we'll go to that city. Then we'll become a part of that kingdom. In the meantime, we're going to be Republicans, or we're going to be Democrats, or we're going to have this opinion or that. No, 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 no. I think there's a great deception happening today, and we've got to open up our ears and hear the voice of God. He's speaking today, but we can't see his handiwork in the heavens when we're in the cities. I believe we have to get out, just like Jesus got away. He loved to get away, and then he said, follow me. He would get away from the crowds. He would move away. He would go to places of desolation, and then he said, what I'm doing, I want you to do too. We need to get away from the madness. We need to get away from the stress. We need to listen to the voice of God. And when we do, we're going to hear very different things than what we're hearing in the city. Because I believe the city is filled with a tremendous amount of corruption. All manner of evil things happen in the city. The city is where these things happen. And remember, in the book of Revelation, I've long been fascinated by this woman that sits upon this beast. I've been studying this woman now for, I guess, 15 years. I've probably written 3 books on her, but I've never released any of them. I just have, you know, pages and pages and pages of facts about who is this woman. And here's what we know. She is, the Bible tells us in Revelation 17, that the angel, great angel says, this woman that sits upon the beast, she is a great city. She's a great city. She's a great city. And then right after that, we see what? And she's called Babylon the Great, first city the Bible ever talks about, Genesis 11. Then, right after that, we see the coming down of the New Jerusalem. God replaces that city, that wicked city, and all of its offspring. Oh, she's the mother of all harlots, isn't she? She's that great city and all of her offspring. He does not like any of them. But he brings down his own city, right? The holy city. And he's going to replace it. So I would say that mankind has, and especially American Christians in general, let's just stick to American Christians, because we don't expect anything of people who are not born again. Nothing. We expect nothing. They're spiritually dead. But from Christian Americans, American Christians, what we would say is we would expect them to read the Bible and to be very, very vigilant as to the hour. And we believe today that deception is greater than at any other time in history.
You were very correct in your statement. Deception is higher today at any time in history. And when we look at the scriptures, at what Jesus said would come upon us in the end times, in Matthew chapter 24, the disciples asked Jesus, what will be the sign of your coming? And what will be the sign of the end of the days? And Jesus begins by saying, let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come unless there come a great falling away. And as he goes on listing the things that will happen in the end times, he lists also that many shall be offended and will start to hate each other over that offense. And exactly what you said about the building of the city, it starts out in Genesis. The land of Shinar, Nimrod, the Tower of Babel. they began off with one mind to do and establish a city so they could make a name for themselves. And what it does say in Genesis is that they were confounded by God, their languages were changed, and they were taken away to many different nations. But that goal of building that city lived on with them even after they were dispersed. And we are seeing in these end times the rebuilding or the attempt to finalize that city, that building, that the old men of renown, the giants, the tyrants, whatever you want to call them, set out to build. And it is very prophetic. And yes, you said you had 3 books worth of material on the city. That's
easily, yeah. Easily,
love,
yeah.
To see,
I've been studying.
Release one of those.
Yeah, maybe so. It's one of those things that it's been weighing on me quite a bit. I've got another one coming out first, but that's a topic that is so, so key. Matthew 24 is filled with a lot of great information. It also says there that when the gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all the nations, then the end will come. And I love that phrase, the gospel of the kingdom. That good news of God's glorious coming kingdom needs to be proclaimed and published from the pulpits. You know, if America's pulpits were filled with the good and glorious news of Christ's coming kingdom instead of bickering about human kingdoms, then the church would actually have a tremendous amount of relevance to the people today. But instead, all the, you know, what I hear a lot of the church folks talking about is mainly human kingdoms, and they're upset that human kingdoms aren't going the way that they should go. And yet, out of the other side of their mouth, they say that all men are sinful and they need Jesus. So, in other words, they're basically saying all men are sinners, and how come these sinners can't, you know, lead themselves? How come they can't make this? How come they can't make this work? How come we can't? Well, we already know the answer to that. The reason why this doesn't work is because we rejected God, right? Period. That's why it doesn't work. And so, to try to identify some problem or some person as the reason why all of this went wrong totally misses the point. The point is not who screwed it. I mean, if we want to do that, we should blame Adam, right? But or Eve. But instead, we tried to blame individuals or people, and that's why even with Saudi Arabia, I said they're just one of the problems, right? They're just one of the problems. But the main problem is that we have rejected God. We have built great cities in defiance of God, making great names for ourselves. I mean, when you look at Trump Towers, and I have very little opinion on Trump. I love the fact that he's bringing up some things that need to be said. I love it. But I don't care if he gets elected. What do I care? I don't have a dog in this fight. But I will tell you this. When you look at Trump Towers, how is that any different from the Tower of Babel? I mean, we're surrounded by Tower of Babel. These people built a tower to make their name great, right? We might as well just put the name on top of it. So I think we're surrounded today, as we said, deception. I think we're surrounded today in modern Babels, and we will only be frustrated if we don't understand why our Babel doesn't work properly, right? We're just beating our heads against the wall. We need to wake up and listen to our own preaching and say, we tell people they have sin. We say that the kingdom of God is the answer. That's the answer. And the problem is sin. So we need to simplify it. But there are some really important things that are happening that we do need to pay attention to. I mean, again, whenever our economy is on the brink and it's going to impact our wallets and it's going to be something that might impact, you know, our stewardship, that's something we really need to know about. And we need to have, you know, maybe even an opinion on that. But there are so many things today that the world wants us to have an opinion on that we really can't change. One of those things would be something like the death penalty. You know, I think as a Christian, and this is just my own personal belief, but with the death penalty, I choose not to have an opinion on the death penalty. Now, somebody would say, well, Jerry, you should believe in the death penalty. Why do I have to believe in the death penalty? This is a perfect example. Why do I have to believe in the death penalty? Or why do I have to not believe in the death penalty? You see, what I feel about that impacts no one, right? No one will be impacted by my decision upon that. Until I'm called upon to have an opinion about that, I'm simply spouting words into the air to talk about why I don't like that or why I do like that. In other words, I can't impact any change on it. I'm not a governor. I can't make a midnight call. So therefore, doesn't it just kind of stoke tension, and doesn't it stoke dissension between brothers and sisters when we all have to have an opinion on everything? And that's exactly what this world today has become through Facebook and Twitter. Everybody has an opinion on everything, and then everybody's offended by everybody, and Satan gets what he wants, right? And the gospel doesn't get preached. And that's exactly what's happening. I believe that the gospel of the kingdom needs to go forward. I believe that that gospel of the kingdom is not the kingdom of Saudi Arabia. It's no kingdom on this earth, but it's a kingdom on high. And I am just very, very thankful that, you know, I am a part of that kingdom. I mean, and I want other people to be a part of that kingdom. But in order to become a part of that kingdom, you have to understand and admit that Adam made a mistake, and that Eve made a mistake, you know, and that you go back through time and you look and you see that, man, I am part of a lineage of people who are deteriorating. I'm part of a race that is getting worse, not better. But the terrible thing about it is that I am deceived to believe that I am getting better. That's the terrible lie. And cities magnify that. They make us think that we're bigger than we are, that they hide our sin. They're our big fig leaf that we put over ourselves to hide the fact that we're naked and that we're alone and that we haven't, you know, dealt with God. Cities allow us to hide. Funny enough, it's when you get out in the middle of nowhere and you look up at the great expanse, that's when you realize that you're alone. And I think that's missing from people who are born and raised in the city and never leave the city. They're constantly bombarded by so many spirits, and it's very difficult to know God's voice and know God's word in an environment like that. It can happen, of course. But look at what God does in the Bible. He pulls men out of the cities to do his great works. And then he sends them back into the cities with a mission, right? When Jesus went to Jerusalem, he went there with a mission. He didn't go there to hang out. He was not a cosmopolitan guy. He went to Jerusalem because he had a purpose. When he wasn't there, he was a nomad. Paul, you know, same way. He went across the whole Europe. And others, you know, nomads. I mean, just going across preaching this good news of the kingdom. They certainly did not want to kill their Christian brothers or sisters over an issue of rights. That's what Christian America has to reconcile. I think if you're going to say America is a Christian nation, you have to explain why early Christians thought that it was important. Because, you know, it's just the same way. I mean, I could ask you guys, you know, what would it take, Joe, for you to, I mean, I know this is crazy, but just seriously, just think about this. I'm a Christian brother, you're a Christian brother, right? Let's say we both have guns. Let's say I live in England and you live in the colonies, okay? But I'm a Christian, you're a Christian, we both read the Bible, right? Both Christians. You got a gun, I got a gun. What would I have to do to you to get you to stop loving me as a brother and take a gun and shoot me? What would it take? What would I have? What if I said I was going to raise your taxes by 10%? What if I said that I didn't think that you should have a certain right to a certain thing? Would that excuse you at that point to go ahead and pick up a gun and shoot me? And if you say yes, then you have a Christian America, right? That is a Christian America. If you say no, then you cannot have a Christian America, because Christians are not Christians. Christians are Christ-like. Anything that's not Christ-like is not a Christian.
And this is an area of study I've been doing a lot of research on, and it's from an author from the 1900 named Jones, and he talks about Christian patriotism and the difference between patriotism and idolatry and where that line is drawn. And yes, you know, as a Christian brother in America, in the colonies, with a gun to a Christian brother in England, what would it take? It would take a threat, a direct threat on the life of somebody around me or a family member. But unfortunately, as we say, we're a Christian nation,
Let's think about that. Let's actually think about that. So if a Christian brother, let's say that you and a Christian brother had gone to church earlier that day.
Okay.
And let's say that that Christian brother then did what England did to America and said, I'm going to charge you more taxes on your tea. Would you feel that killing that Christian brother to prevent him from exacting that money from your wallet, what scripture would you appeal to?
There is no scripture that would allow me to take an increase on taxes or take away a perceived right. The only commandments that we are to follow are those that God gave us in the Bible, and the basic outline for how we are supposed to live is in the Bible. And, we're not to take up violence and anger against anyone, but at the same time we are, it would take a personal threat to, like I said, to a life that is close to me in proximity or family.
What about your own? What if somebody was holding a gun to your head? Would that justify you to kill them? And if so, that's my problem with the whole concept, is that I can't think of a situation, because I can think of Paul being in a situation where he was constantly under danger, and his people, his sons of the faith, his daughters in the faith were in trouble. But yet he never picked up a sword and sought to make things even that way, because he was a Christ follower. He followed Christ. Christ said, "Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't kill people. Especially don't kill your brothers and sisters in the faith." Right, and that's exactly how America was formed. They killed their own brothers and sisters in the faith, and that's really a hard thing to get around, and still call it Christian. I wish they would take away the word Christian from it, because it really gives us a bad name. But just as the other day, I think what I was saying about Trump, Trump had made the comment recently that he said eye for an eye was his favorite verse, and the Christians don't want to talk about that, but they really do. I mean, I believe eye for an eye is a very, very important concept to most American Christians. It's what we call spiritual transgenderism. Spiritual transgenderism. I think a lot of American Christians today are actually secretly Jews or Muslims because they actually believe in an eye for an eye. They really like the Old Testament, and they don't realize that they're not really Christians, they're actually Jews. If they would convert, Christianity would become more pure. I think it's the same way with Christians, and I think there's a lot of Muslims who are actually confused thinking that they're Christians because they want to kill people who kill them, and they want to get them first even often. Those people are actually Muslims, and they should convert and become Muslims, because when they're in the church, they don't pay attention to what the Bible says, and that's the first thing that we know that they're not a Christian. And secondly, it makes it very difficult for new Christians to understand what they're supposed to believe. So, you know, if you believe that eye for an eye is true, like Trump says, and you think that should still be the law, then you're probably a Jew, right? You're probably a Jew, and so that's how we look at it. So in other words, do we hold to the law? Do we hold to grace, or do we hold to the Islamic law? And I think a lot of people in America today who claim to be Christians are actually Jews or Muslims. They're just spiritual transgenders. They're just confused. They don't know. They're Christian because they're white.
It's like most issues, you know. What it boils down to, especially in Christianity, is the fact that the congregation, as well as the leadership, do not read their Bibles, do not seek the will of God, do not take to prayer, and therefore believe what is told to them, and believe the things that they perceive to be right, or they perceive to be Christian, like, rather than actually getting into the Bible and doing what the Word says. We got about 15 minutes left before the top of the hour, Jerry, and I don't want to knock you off your subject, but I'd like to, before we take listener calls with you, I'd like to talk to you about the gold-backed yuan that was launched recently in the last couple minutes of this hour, if we could.
Oh, sure.
And the threat that it poses to the American economy, and how the new gold-backed yuan looks to rearrange the world or global economy.
Yeah, the this is a really interesting story. The Chinese yuan is a growing currency. It's a growing currency, as everybody knows. One of the things that they do not have power over right now is the pricing power over bullion, over the gold market. By creating their own yuan-denominated gold exchange, what they're going to be able to do is, as their currency increases in usage across the globe, it's going to allow them to have greater purchasing or pricing power over gold. And that actually is good news for gold investors, because China has a lot of gold, and no doubt it would like to see gold prices higher, because then they can, you know, if you have a bunch of gold and then you can set the price, of course you would want to make it as worth as much as possible, right? And so that's certainly what many people believe is coming. I've read different analysis, you know, from different vantage points on the whole thing. I think really what it is just simply China stepping into the market, allowing it to have pricing power over gold, and because it wants to back, of course, its yuan with gold. When they do that, they will be the very first currency since 1971 that will actually have a gold backing. And in this age of fiat currency, and people are beginning to wake up to that, China is going to play right into that hand. And they're going to get massive market share for their currency in a situation like that, much more than they would if they didn't back it with gold. So it's a really smart play by China. China is the dominant player of the 21st century, without a doubt. What's so concerning, though, about our present time is that, and the reason why I'm such a gold bull, is that if you go back to 0 AD, right, or 1 AD, the time of Christ, and you go all the way to the Industrial Revolution, let's go all the way out to 1877 or so. If you look at the actual growth rate during that time, and remember, everything's about growth today. Growth, growth, growth. We got to have more growth. That's how you fix everything. Growth, growth, growth. Well, if you look at the growth rate from zero to about 1877, it's practically flat. I mean, you know, there is growth, of course, but it's practically flat. If you look at growth from 1971 all the way to today, 2016, we have actually grown a tremendous magnitude, possibly 400 times, according to some metrics. And so what's happening today is that we have, for the first time, a completely debt-based economy. There is nothing backing it up at all. And literally everything is going up, 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 up. And that's why you want a raise at the end of the year. That's why you expect a raise at the end of the year, because raises are supposed to come. Now, that's a kind of foreign concept to history. History didn't have raises. You know, raises are not that common. You know, raises would mean that, you know, either A, your aptitude has improved, or B, there's inflation, right? And in our
raises
case,
and
it's
taxes.
Because yeah,
that,
well, and
that,
every and
that's it, something that's expected.
And everything is going up. So taxes are going up, right? You have the stock market going up. You have the housing values are supposed to go up. The natural direction for everything in the American economy is up, and that is the problem. That's the whole problem, because if you live with the expectation that everything is supposed to go up, then you have that requires ever perpetual growing amounts of debt. And today we have so much debt that it's just simply inconceivable to see how this will be sustainable. And in fact, where we are right now, we're beginning to see a transfer, as we were talking about China, moving from the United States dominance, the dollar dominance, the U.S. dominance, now moving, especially with the Saudi relation in flux. There are other potential suitors for the Saudis. China is certainly one. And so now you have countries like China, which are rising, threatening that dollar dominance. And the lifestyle that you and I have, you know what, I can boil it down to this. We've said a lot tonight. It really boils down to this. Christians, you and I, people who believe in Christ, if we do not see the writing on the wall, woe to us, right? Woe to us. If you have debt levels going this high and you have Christians who are not prepared, we're going to be the ones knocking on the unbeliever's door whenever everything hits the fan, and we're going to say, hey, you know, we were the ones up on stage scaring you about the great red dragon that's standing on the sea. We were the ones telling you that Iran was going to bomb Israel. We were the ones who were spooking you and, you know, driving you out of your mind with all of these crazy ideas. Can I have a loaf of bread because I didn't think to go buy an extra loaf, right? This is nonsense. I mean, it's absolute nonsense. So there's a lot of fear being engendered in the Christian community, but there's not a lot of action. If there really is fear, if there really is genuine things to be worried about, which there really are, we need to be in prayer and we need to be good stewards. And I think that's the whole point of this, is that regardless of what happens with Saudi Arabia, regardless of what happens with that Chinese yuan story, in the end, we have too much debt. And because of our debt, Saudi Arabia has too much influence over us. Because of our debt, this is a threatening story from China. And because of our debt, we're not going to be prepared whenever the stuff really hits the fan. And if the Christians are the ones who are knocking on the unbeliever's door because they're not prepared, that's going to make Christians, American Christians, the laughingstock of the world, because they were the ones ratcheting up all the fear, saying stuff was coming. If they're not prepared, that's going to be completely ridiculous.
Yes, it is. And as you said, it would be, the people around the world would be shocked and appalled that the... And isn't China taking a page out of American, the success of American capitalism by America gutting its own manufacturing sector to China increasing its manufacturing sector, from America taking the gold away from the currency and China taking the gold and backing their currency up with it? Wouldn't you say that China's taken a playbook out of the how to be successful in a capitalist society from America?
Well, I think if anything, we need to be cautious with that tone, because China has for a long time been the dominant player. I mean, their GDP levels, even at the height of the British Empire, were higher than the British Empire. I think we may have talked about that before in the past on one of your shows, but at one point, at the greatest point of the British Empire, including their wonderful crown of India, if you take all of their GDP and you compare it to China at the time, China was still bigger. The Chinese GDP. So China has always been this behemoth on the world stage. But it hasn't always, over the last several hundred years, things have changed. But that's changing again. So it's been in flux. I would say that, yes, they're playing this smart, but they're also, going back to the gold like they did in Bretton Woods, if that's what you're referring to, 1944 Bretton Woods, whenever the dollar was made as good as gold at that conference. Then yes, China is in some ways mirroring that by using gold to create confidence in its currency. But I think they're going to do things differently than the U.S. has done. I think they'll be smarter. They're an old pro at empire. They've done this a lot. They've been an empire throughout world history, and they're no stranger to empire. America is an experiment. It's really gone bad toward the end, and there's so much debt now. We'll see if they can somehow salvage it, but I think China will be a lot more wise in how it grows, and I think we'll be very, very stunned at how fast and how radical things are going to be changing over the course of the next decade or two. I think it's going to be very, very astonishing to the average American who's not watching this stuff. You know,
okay, Jerry. Just to be clear, okay, we're talking about debt now. General gross government debt, I guess. I want to clarify this for listeners and even for myself. When we talk about debt, we're talking about gross national debt, countries per countries. For example, the United States has, I think 36 in terms of debt to GDP at 71.8%. Does that sound right? And forgive me if that's or if that's off a little bit.
Well, I mean, the current national debt today is about 19.2 trillion. I mean, that's where it stands at about roughly. And then if you look at total, you know, GDP that comes in, you know, it's, I mean, not GDP, I'm sorry. If you look at total GDP, you know, that figure is at about 18.2. You know, so actually, according to some metrics, we're already over 100%. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Mm-hmm. Because I think where a lot of people get confused, including me, is understanding the terms, because the terms seem to be a moving target. When we talk about debt, we talk about a number, but then we are told the debt is going down. I don't quite understand what metrics they use to make an assertive statement like that, because, as I just mentioned, if you check the CIA fact book, for example, from April of 2014 for 2013,
they use spending futures.
Well, yes,
saying their spending futures are down, you know, which will bring the national debt down. And you're right with the rhetoric; they do say it in terms as though they have cut the national deficit in half.
But okay, I guess, yeah, but Jerry, I guess my question to you is, where we are in debt, how can we possibly sustain 19 trillion and growing? How can we sustain that at all? And when is there a drop dead date or a drop dead number for something like that?
Well, I mean, when we say, well, first of all, we should probably clarify that debt number, because we talked about it real briefly. That U.S. national debt number is the public debt. You know, it's the public debt. It's 19.2 trillion. But, you know, there's all kinds of debt figures, like you said. I mean, if you look at, you know, like, for example, you know, all the unfunded obligations, you know, you could say that's 100 trillion, or you could say that's 140 trillion. All depends how far you want to go out on the time frame. So you may hear somebody say, oh, you know, we're $200 trillion in debt. But what they're doing is they are extrapolating between now and some future date. And you may not know what that future date that they're using is. So if I were to say the unfunded obligations or the unfunded liabilities that we presently owe, that we know we're on the hook for, that's $100 trillion, right? That is a lot of money. I mean, that is a lot of money. And but today, you know, the stated public national debt is 19.2 trillion. And that's completely unsustainable, of course. The problem is that until we change the system, you can't really change the debt, because the money itself, or the currency itself, we should say more properly, is debt. And we've talked about that before, I think, where we talk about on the top of the dollar bill, it says Federal Reserve note, and that means that it's a piece of debt. So if the Federal Reserve issues more money to the government, and the government then takes that money and then pays off the debt, then they have interest they got to pay back still. It's a big Ponzi scheme.
But, okay, now hold that thought, because let me ask you a question. And not too many people have been able to answer, I don't know anyone has answered this question. Okay, if this is nothing but a Ponzi scheme, and I believe it is, we all believe it is, what's to say, for example, if I was the president, for example, why couldn't I say, you know what, hey, Fed, this debt is illegal. It's immoral. It's antithetical to the Constitution. It's not legitimate debt. Pound sand. What would happen?
Well,
can we do that?
Well, certainly. I mean, I guess you could. It would be similar to the, you know, to Washington saying something to Saudi Arabia, right, along those same lines. It would have similar impacts upon us if we were to say to the Fed that we're not paying back these dollars. We would not have dollars to use. I mean, and the other crazy fact is that if you did pay down the national debt, if you paid down the national debt, if everybody paid off all their debt, there wouldn't be any money left. That's according to the Central Bank of Canada. Money is debt. If you pay all the debt, you have no money. It's money is debt. I mean, that's the most crazy concept that I learned in once I got out of college. They didn't teach me that in college. I learned that outside of college. That money itself.
That blows my mind. That snappy you heard was just a vein popping in my head, because it. Yeah, you're right. It's crazy, isn't it?
It's nonsense. Yeah.
But we couldn't go back, and I know we're short on time, but we couldn't go back to a constitutional based money supply where the Treasury issues the coinage.
Sure, you could.
Until the Fed to take a leap.
Not without huge repercussions. Yeah, I mean, no way. Not without huge repercussions. We could and should, but we need to be ready for the repercussions, which would be huge.
Yeah, that'd be a deadly transition.
I'd like
folks to
try that. Write me in on this November.
Hey, no. We're heading that way anyway, so we might as well get it over while we can. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on this Monday edition with Jerry Robinson, our guest, the author of Bankruptcy of a Nation, his website, ftmdaily.com. We're going to take your calls with Jerry on the other side, 844-769-2944. We'll be right back.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.